raining. Take that, global warming. It's actually cold. That proves, that disproves it. There's no such thing as global warming.
At least according to the Daily Mail.
At least according to me.
Is that what they've said?
Not quite.
No.
We'll get onto that later.
We'll get onto that. We'll get onto that. But first, we'll get cracking with Season 4, Episode 7.
Yeah!
Of the Tux Radar yes. Podcast. Yes.
Come on!
Come on, yes. In this thrill-packed podcast, we've got news, we've got rants and raves, we've got Speak Your Brains, we've got The Other Thing, and we've got Open Ballot.
Wow.
Yeah!
We spoil them.
We spoil you, and you spoil us with the awesome quality of your awesome comments and feedback, which we love, so yes, please keep it coming.
It really does help on a Monday morning.
And if you want... to subscribe to the magazine, which we also produce, which is called Linux Format. keep us safe until the next round of redundancies here at Future Publishing. You can do so at tinyurl.com/LXFOffer1. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's what it says in John's excellent podcast notes.
I forgot the notes. I did that from memory.
Oh, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, thanks, John.
After 7 episodes, you've learned.
4 seasons. 4 and 7 episodes. That's true. Introductions. Yes, I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Jonathan Roberts.
I'm Graham Morrison.
And I'm Ben Everard.
And that's what you get when you forget to bring the notes.
Okay, so time for the news.
Time for the news.
Excellent.
Even John's forgotten his notes. Here, John, take my copy.
I never bring any notes.
Is that to save the trees?
No, it's because the Linux machine's not on the same network as the printer here at the office, so... Great, so now it's time for the news.
Wow, and what a fantastic day it is.
Yeah, it is quite
exciting. Linux users everywhere. Yeah. Let's celebrate good times.
It is. The first item of news today, Ubuntu 12.04 is going to be released some point during the day.
Well hopefully. Done, guys.
If it's not, we're going to look fools for announcing it now. But what does everyone think of the new release? Graham?
I have actually installed it, mainly to check that Linux Format was still on the Ubuntu Software Center.
Which it is, and it's got some great reviews as well.
Yes, it has. So thanks, folks, for that. I can't really comment as I've not used it in any anger. It's just like an alien planet to me these days because not only am I a KDE user on an Arch distribution, which is just too much of a jump to Unity. I must say that it looks nice, and I came around to your desk and you showed me some things yesterday. And we're generally quite positive about it, aren't we?
Yeah, it feels unusual to be positive about it, but Unity in 12.04 seems really good. I've been using it for a few days now. I'm really enjoying it. It is still very similar to GNOME Shell, and I still have questions about it, but it's just nice to use. It's a good user experience. It's not just easy to use. It's a good user experience. It feels polished. Ben, have you tried it?
Yeah, I've tried it. I like it as well. It's come a long way, as you say, since in the various 11 versions of Ubuntu. And as I said in the last podcast, it's not something I'm going to be switching to, but I could see myself switching in maybe a couple more versions if it keeps developing at the rate it's going at.
Yeah.
Do you think the rate of development is faster than that of GNOME's?
To be honest, I haven't really been keeping up with I've been using Cinnamon.
I mean, I've gone from GNOME Shell to Unity in the last few days to try it out. And it's Unity actually just... There's not a big difference between them. The fundamentals are quite similar. But Unity just... It feels slightly more pleasant to use. I feel better using it. I feel almost excited to use it.
Do you know why?
No, I can't. I guess maybe the animations are just right, and I like that the launcher is present all the time.
Yeah.
It exposes the functions a bit better. But something about it just is enjoyable to use. I'm surprised.
It's an LTS release, isn't it?
Yeah,
they've got to get it right for this one.
Yeah, which is really good. Andrew, have you?
I haven't yet used Ubuntu 12.04, but I did spend some time chatting with Ubuntu's technical architect a couple of months ago.
Oh, yeah.
That's Alison Randall.
Yeah.
And there's going to be an interview with her in the forthcoming issue of Linux Format. and she was saying, I was surprised to hear her say it, but she said that that Unity is an experiment.
She said that she described Unity as an experiment. Yeah.
So they
what
never...
does she mean by that?
Well, it's nice to hear some honesty from Canonical, isn't it?
It's great.
Canonical are always honest.
Sorry, yes.
We
haven't got their payment from them this month.
we'll come on to that later. What she said was that Unity came out through a lot of usability testing. They created the first version of Unity. Mm-hmm. It didn't work quite as well as they hoped it would.
Yeah.
Because things never do.
Yeah.
So they just sat down again in front of a new bunch of users and tested what they found they could do more easily and what they had difficulty doing. So they're constantly, they've been refining it, which is great to hear. It's not like they've had an idea and then gone, this is it, this is the future of the desktop, this is the new paradigm that will blah, blah, blah. You know, they are, from the beginning of the process of Unity, they were open to the idea of improvement.
That is a really great mindset to have.
Yeah, exactly. They've won already.
Did you just say something positive about Canonical, John?
I did. I feel kind of strange. You know, there are still things I think they could do better.
Where's the real John?
I had a holiday. It was a really great holiday as well. But I know, there are things I think Canonical could still do better. I wish there'd been closer cooperation between them and GNOME. I wish they contributed upstream more often with their work and things. But I do think that Unity, they're going in the right direction. I'd just love to see that same kind of attention get put into some of the applications now as well, see more user testing done on the different applications on the desktop. And I'm going to be partially positive about Canonical today. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Next news item, but it's exciting, so it's good. There's rumours have been resurfaced that Steam is coming to Linux along with the Source game engine. This is from Veronix. It's been a rumour for a while now, but it sounds like it's actually happening because he went to Valve's offices and they revealed it to him. So, Ben?
I'm not much of a gamer myself, so it's not going to change my Linux experience that much, but I mean, it's great news for the platform in general. So obviously that's going to bring a huge amount of software, and
more developers developing. Graham,
I think it's awesome. I don't actually do that much gaming on a PC anymore. I used to. I use a console, but it's whenever you ask people why they don't choose Linux or why they don't choose Linux exclusively, at least in a technical environment, it's people nearly always say it's because of games. They always switch back to Windows to play their AAA titles.
Yeah, that's why they keep the dual boot around, is for gaming.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Steam is a fantastic platform. It does have DRM, but it's very, very unrestrictive in terms of you can install it on lots of machines and across lots of different platforms. And it's just going to be so convenient to have Source games on your Linux desktop. And it's a fantastic boon to Linux, in that one of the biggest games publishing companies in the world it seems to be, from the Veronix article, so enthusiastic about bringing the technology to Linux. Even if that does end up in, you know, a Linux box under the television,
which would be really exciting anyway.
I think it's brilliant.
One interesting thing about this is that it's just the Source engine code that's getting ported. It's not all the games that are going to be there. But, I mean, you were saying that with the Humble Bundle, it's just a couple of guys who port all of those games and they sit down and they hack for a week and port each one.
A lot of the time it's just one or two people who've got very good knowledge of Linux who take the source code of a developer who's given their blessing and port it.
So it's not that massive a task.
It's a massive task if you want something like Bioshock ported to Linux.
But for a skilled person, it's not...
Yes. Funny Mac business.
Funny Linux business.
Yeah. But if the Source engine is ported, there are still lots of Source games coming out, and the Source engine is always going under one revision after another as each basically Half-Life engine comes out. And that will mean that just by default, we'll get lots of other titles too, hopefully.
Excellent.
In the same way that OS X users do.
Yeah, yeah. Andrew, will this replace DOSBox for you?
I've already got Frontier and Syndicate. I need nothing else.
Enough to keep you busy. Cool. Google Drive has been announced, but with no Linux client yet. Okay, so the question is, what do you think of Google Drive? Will you keep your files on there? And
what is Google Drive?
5 gigabytes of free storage.
Dropbox by Google.
But integrated into Google services, so you can share pictures and comment and email and stuff from it.
So you get a shared folder on your Linux box that when you drop files into that, they'll be synced to the cloud, synced to your Google account, so that they'll appear in... If you ever use Google Docs, then that's kind of got a file manager interface, so your files will automatically appear there. In theory, your Google Docs also appear, and you can't do it yet, but you should be able to edit them, say, in LibreOffice on your desktop, and it's automatically synced to the cloud. So it's like Dropbox integrated with Google's own apps.
This sounds like the sort of the kind of thing that the bloke from PC World tried to sell me for whatever it was, £50 a year or
something. Yeah, I bet you're glad you didn't buy that now.
I am. I was tempted, though.
It's a lot cheaper than Dropbox. It's also, suppose we haven't been able to test it yet, but it's got some cool features such as optical character recognition on scanned documents you put into the folder so that you get awesome Google search. So if, for example, at home you decide to scan every bill and everything that comes into the house and chuck away the paper...
Trust that to Google to look after.
I think I trust Google more than I trust me, yeah.
And you also have a local copy.
You could search all of your accounts or your bills just by in the same way that you do Google.
And they also use the Google Goggles technology, so it's not just text it scans, but actual pictures to try and pick up things.
Oh, cool.
The example they give is of the Grand Canyon.
Right.
They say that if you take photos of the Grand Canyon, you can then search for Canyon,
right,
and they'll come up. And obviously all your search results will be peppered with adverts for Grand Canyon.
Well, one of the things that a lot of people have brought up is that Google's new licensing, Google's new end user agreement is a bit ambiguous in terms of what they can do with their data, because there's a caveat that they, in the future, they reserve the right to create other products based on your data.
Yeah, and advertising based on your...
Yeah, which while they do accept your intellectual property and your right to actually, it is yours... It's not as explicit as it is actually with Microsoft SkyDrive and Dropbox, where they explicitly say you retain complete ownership. Mm-hmm. If you write the script of a novel, it's your novel. Whereas it could be construed with Google's licensing terms that they could basically take the script of your novel and go and make it into a film themselves. They won't, I'm sure. But it's just another level of fuzziness in terms of Google's dominant nation of my data.
I mean, on the whole, I'm getting quite a positive reviewer from my sense of you guys seem quite positive about it. Is that a fair?
I don't see it as massively different from the other cloud clients. Yeah, it's got the OCR and the...
There's no Linux client, which I think is shameful for Linux.
They also recently removed a Picasa client as well. Maybe they do say there's going to be a Linux client, but I mean, it's not getting the impression that it's a first tier.
There's also no iPad and IE phone client.
Is there not? Yeah.
They've announced that there's going to be one.
Right.
But Linux is such a massive part of Google's ecosystem, and also presumably... Google's Drive is going to be an integral part of the Chrome OS.
Mm.
So they're doing all of it. They've already done all the stuff. There was a beta version for Linux. They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
And okay, so they're saying, well, okay, Linux desktop use is less than 1%, but, you know, it's not the right thing. It's not Google doing good.
Not Google doing good. I suppose they still use it a lot internally, like you say with Chrome OS, and they customized Ubuntu that they were rumored to use.
And their servers. And Android.
Yeah. So I'm sure we will see Linux support.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. I mean, apparently the API, people are already working on Python access.
Yeah, I've seen a Fuse-based system as well for access. So anyway, that's Google Drive. Let us know if you tried it on a different desktop and send us a message. We'll be interested to hear how you've gotten on. Next piece of news is that Linus has shared the Millennium Technology Prize with someone who works on stem cells. So Linux equals stem cells. Is that about
that's
relevant?
A pretty good analogy. Yeah, that sounds good. You can do anything with Linux. You can do anything with a stem cell.
That's true. That is true. That was accidental. I was thinking just from a point of view of worthwhileness. It seems like
importance to the future of
humankind. Yeah, it seems like quite an equation, because that is what the Millennium Prize is for. Technology that changes the world, basically, and to put Linux on the same level as the guy who's been working on stem cells, like, it's quite a...
I think it's more important than that.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's justified, because if you look at all the advancements that are based on technology which require having a cheap, reusable operating system, Google... How much would it have cost Google to create a competitor to iPhone if they couldn't just take a kernel? How much would it cost Facebook to run if they had to pay licenses for all their servers? And if they did that, could they offer it for free?
Mm. And I mean, it's just knowing that even when the world of OS X and Microsoft turns awful in the future, we've always got the source code, we've always got Linux. And that's really why I got interested in computers again, because having that as a foundation is so important in a world that is now totally dominated by technology.
Yeah.
Linux is there to keep OS, to keep Apple and Microsoft honest.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like kind of a fallback and worst case scenario.
Yeah.
So that's that. And in other news, it's still raining here, but there's still a hosepipe ban. is this madness, or is...
So I live in Wiltshire, and there isn't a hosepipe ban in Wiltshire.
So you're safe.
So yeah. you posh bath types.
We don't have a hosepipe ban here. I don't even have a garden to use here. But the point is, the Daily Mail, for BBC Radio 2, several local news stations have been running stories saying that since it's been raining so much, why is there still a hosepipe ban?
A better question was, since it's been raining so much, why do you care?
Very good take. Either way, I hang my head, you know. It's fine if you don't get the science of things, but the media should do a better job of researching this and appreciating that 2 years of below average rainfall takes longer than 2 weeks of a bit of rain to percolate through to the ground store.
I think you're being too kind there, John. I don't think it's fine if you don't get that science.
No, but if you've not been informed about it, you should have someone inform you, and then you should accept, you know?
I mean, water companies relying purely on groundwater for their water reserves.
Yeah, there should be more. Just the world is crazy.
What about losing more in leaks in a single hour?
3 billion litres a day or something, did I hear?
Something mad like billion. That. So five trillion litres of water.
It's a lot of water every day. Anyway, for anyone who doesn't live in the UK, appreciate that it's now raining and we're in drought, but also appreciate the Daily Mail and others.
Well, the south of England, really, rather than the whole of the UK.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I can do my bit to help here, because it does seem to rain every day I choose to cycle in.
Oh, keep cycling then.
So, the more I cycle, give it a month of cycling and we should be fine.
Excellent. Excellent, and that's the end of the news.
Okay, we're actually running quite late. That was a very long lightning news section, so let's fly through Discovery of the Week, which is handy because I haven't discovered anything that good. Shall I start? Get one out of the way. Firstly, I've had real problems with that GTK browsers on my KDE desktop. Ben actually helped me sort it out, which actually meant me installing GNOME and then running the browsers in GNOME and then going back to KDE, and everything works. The latency on them has been awful in Chrome and Firefox. So I installed a browser called Qt Web, which is really good. It's only 5.7 mega download, and it does almost everything that Chrome and Firefox does. It's even got an integral torrent tracker, not that I actually use it. It uses WebKit, and it's fast and brilliant. My other discovery actually was I recently read Rendezvous with Rama by Arthur C. Clarke, just as a bit of nostalgia because I read it as a kid. It was written in 1973, and there's a point at the end of the book where these guys are in space, and Earth send a secure message to these guys in space, and it's very important that nobody intercepts it or reads it other than the commander who's on the spaceship. And this is what Arthur C. Clarke wrote in 1973. The message cannot be intercepted. It is going by multiple pseudo-random routing, so I can talk in clear English, which I thought was fantastic, considering this is kind of pre any computer revolution. And in fact, technology is hardly mentioned in the book. And basically, he's explaining the Tor network back in 1973 for secure communication.
That's awesome. Arthur C. Clarke, the legend.
Awesome. Anyone else?
I have a very quick one.
Cool.
I want to know what kind of memory I had in my laptop and, you know, how many slots were taken up and things. Remember command DMI decode --- memory on the command line, and it will output you
That's
your
memory brilliant.
Configuration.
Oh, there are so many times when I've needed to know that.
And not only that, but it grabs all the BIOS information so you can find out processor maximum speed capable and... you know, so for upgrading, that's the way to go.
Prices on Amazon?
Not quite. But yeah, man DMI decode if you ever need to know some hardware info.
Brilliant. That's a great discovery. Andrew?
I'll go next because I can see that Ben's got something really cool. Two discoveries. I've been using KDE this week, and it's not that bad. Although I do find that when I double-click on things, it opens them twice. So it's just like using Windows when it gets too slow and you click and then you don't think anything's happened. So then you double click and then half an hour later, three windows pop up.
You've got to change that habit of a lifetime and just click
You can
once.
Change it to single click.
I'm sure you can. And my second discovery is that the University of Bournemouth, the teeming metropolis of Dorsetshire, is running a paid PhD programme called Unpacking the Black Box, the ICT Curriculum in Schools. I've got the text here. I'm not going to read it all out. We'll link to it in the notes. But it's all about ICT, GCSEs. Michael Gove is mentioned. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, they'll pay you £14,000 a year, which we decided was tax-free yesterday, did we not?
Probably.
To do some research and get letters after your name. So if you're interested in that, the deadline, I think, for applications is the 31st of March.
I'm tempted.
31st of March.
May. 31st cool. of May.
Cool.
Hey, just quickly before I get on to my discovery, if you're interested in getting involved in the ICT curriculum for schools but don't want to spend 3 years locked in a small cupboard writing about it, the Raspberry Pi Foundation have asked for contributions to their manual, which will be included on the desktop of the default OS. So yeah, have a look on their website for details of that. But my discovery, a couple of weeks ago I wrote to my MP and asking about the snoopers charter that's coming in, and apparently email's too advanced for him, so he sent me a paper copy.
It's because no one can snoop on those paper copies.
They're actually course. Required by law to send out a paper copy.
Are they?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. So yeah,
how do you know it's really from him?
It's got his little name.
And only they can print those.
Portcullis yeah. House head of notepaper.
Yeah, no one else could put it on a letterhead from the House of Commons. That would be impossible. So yeah, he goes into the official government position, he tells me, on exactly what it is. And on first read, it actually looked quite reasonable. But then you sort of get into it in a little bit more detail. And I'll just give you one example from the end. He says, unlike the previous government's proposals, there will be no government database and the data recorded will be strictly limited and regulated and will be destroyed after 1 year. That sounds fair enough until you think, well, if there's no database, where is it deleted from?
And where is it recorded in the first place?
Exactly. So it seems like he's getting into semantic arguments there rather than actual real differences. Mm. I mean, it doesn't really make a difference if it's held in an SQL database or in a text file. They're still holding it.
Yeah.
But on another point, he goes into about how much communications the government can access. And he says that in 2006, 90% of all electronic communications were potentially tappable by the government. And today he thinks about 75% are, which is still a huge proportion.
Yeah.
But the specific example he gives, is, which I think is quite a bad one, is Skype. They want to be able to record and tap into Skype calls. However, as several governments have found, Skype is encrypted and can't be tapped. And it's the very fact of trying to access Skype calls that caused the German or the Bavarian state government to contract a company to create a Trojan horse for them, which they installed on various people's computers. And the details were leaked by WikiLeaks and have been confirmed by the state government.
I've got absolutely nothing against governments developing means to tap things like Skype or Facebook or whatever other digital communications they want to tap. I've got everything against them trying to tap and record everyone's communications without a warrant. If they want to develop the means to do it, get a warrant and put a Trojan on one person's computer, fine by me.
There needs to be some form of judicial process.
Yeah, that's the important part.
Yeah, and he does address that, and I'll just quickly go over it. He's talking about the general communications data, not the contents of the messages. It says the data will be only available to designated senior officers on a case-by-case basis authorised under the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act and overseen by the Inspector of Communications Commissioner. Which, when John did some digging, he found that required permission from the Secretary of State.
Yeah. The Secretary of State.
Yeah, in 2010, there was something like 500,000 requests granted.
Really?
Yeah, for data requests to people like ISPs and mobile phone operators.
Really?
For the content. Yeah. But it's in the government's... yeah. I can send you the link to their data.
Well, maybe
reports.
I was wrong, because it seems impossible that the Secretary of State would be able to authorise all of that.
Well, the section I saw said it was under the Secretary of State's authority, so from their office, right. But it didn't necessarily have to be signed by them.
Okay, right. But that, again, it should be a judge authorizing these things, not a politician.
Yeah, and just to be clear, a judge is required to authorize a warrant to access the contents of the communications. But that does actually bring up quite a technical question as to what is the content. Mm-hmm. Is the TCP header? Is the HTTP header? What headers are they talking about? What content are they talking about?
And as we found out so many times through various research papers in the past few years, just from who you're communicating with, you can find out a lot about a person. One paper showed that you can find out someone's sexual orientation by knowing who their friends on Facebook is. So, you know, if you can figure out who someone's talking to, there's a lot of information to be gleaned there. It all stinks.
Cool. Thanks. We better move on.
It's time for the halfway reminder. Still to come, we have Rants and Raves. No, that's been cancelled due to time pressures. We have Open Ballot, and we've got the other thing. Speak Your Brains.
Speak Your Brains.
Speak Your Brains.
Oh, it's Speak Your Brains. I've had one brain to speak. So thanks very much to Rob Pearman. For sending in your thoughts. It's really good, actually, because if you send in your thoughts for the next episode, it's almost certain that you'll get yours read out. His email. I got an email from the 1010 campaign the other day highlighting their remade initiative to fix things rather than replace them in order to reduce carbon emissions. They lead with, when your favourite pair of jeans loses a button, your computer slows to a crawl and your bike gears start rattling, it can feel like the end of the line, time to get a new one. This sounds like an opportunity for Lugs to get involved and hold remade events to upgrade disaffected Windows users to Linux and address the when your computer slows down to a crawl problem or all too familiar with. Ironic that Microsoft are currently running a radio ad campaign to encourage people to buy a new PC if their current one has slowed down. That's a really important point. A great excuse to get Lugs involved.
I think those Microsoft adverts are absolutely disgusting.
I haven't heard that.
It's like a built-in, well, they're sort of built-in obsolescence. Yeah. Like they get so riddled after a while, and then they're selling that as an advantage. Yeah, like, you know, your last Microsoft PC got extremely infected with rubbish, so it doesn't work anymore. So buy another one.
Yeah,
it's just hideous, shamefaced. They all ought to be embarrassed.
And that's their business model. Well, it's Apple's business model, which Microsoft are really tagging along to.
At least Apple sell good stuff.
Yeah, but they sell stuff that it's almost impossible to do anything with. You can't even replace the battery without sending it back to Apple. You know, it's all designed to make you want to upgrade every 2 years. I mean, the whole smartphone industry is built around the same idea.
But you change your phone every 2 years. When they have a lifetime of about 5 years on phone.
The average update cycle on a smartphone is 11.5 months.
What? It is terrible.
Think of all those child soldiers guarding cobalt mines in, I don't know, wherever they are. That's just, be ashamed, people.
Anyway, it's now time for Open Ballot.
What did we ask? We asked about the old Linux, GNU / Linux question.
Well, we didn't ask about it.
Did we not? Who did?
The ripped off, is it Guy? He started the...
What was the chat? Yeah, well, basically it started in LXF157 with letter, Andrew's response.
Oh yeah.
And then forum post and then a poll and then we took it onto TuxRadar. So
it's almost as if people care.
They do.
So that's why so many people in the comments have mentioned me and how great I am. That's awesome.
That's why we chose this Open Ballot, remember?
Oh, yeah.
you were a little bit sad on Monday.
Okay, so Linux or GNU / Linux, what do you call it? I started counting, but then stopped. Most people say that they call it Linux. A few people stick with GNU / Linux. Three people say it's a waste of time. So more people, hang on, the same amount of people say it's a waste of time as call it GNU / Linux. And then we've
got, can we cancel them out?
That just leaves us with Linux. One contrarian saying, just call it Ubuntu. Thanks for that, Ray Kios. And another chap saying, just call it Android. But let's crack on with the comments. Toby says, credit where credit is due. Hence, we should always say, rather than just GNU / Linux, Frozen Bubble / Super Tux Cart / Pink Pony / Linux. Whoever fails to do that will spend the rest of eternity in hell listening to endless recitals of the Free Software song.
Performed by Mike.
Performed by Mike. Reikios says, just call it Ubuntu. Now you can get your monthly backhander from Mark Shuttleworth.
Which that would be so nice.
Which, you know, I need because I'm slightly overdrawn this month. SDD, says, just call it Android. That's the future. Beardy Jesse makes a good point. He says that GNU adds more layers. I'm assuming it's a he. GNU adds more layers of confusion. Also, what does GNU stand for again? GNU's not Unix.
GNU's not Unix slash Linux.
As if the plethora
Grandpa,
of complexity.
I've installed GNU's yeah.
As if the plethora of complexity for a new user with distros and desktop environments and packages isn't enough, who needs to throw a recursive acronym into the mix? Quite right. Some guy says, is GNU that important? Let's see, we can soon replace GCC with Clang. Glibc can be easily replaced by FreeBSD's C library. What does that leave? Core utils? Please. GNU might have provided some useful components in the early days, but it's becoming less and less relevant. Is that true?
I think it is.
To an extent.
I mean, glibc is still massive yes. and very important. Yeah. You can't just simply drop in the BSD libc library. But it is proportionally becoming a smaller and smaller part of distros.
I think one of the things that Richard Stallman always used to say, it wasn't just about getting credit for what they've done. He always used to say that he wants people to know about issues of freedom that lay behind his development of...
And we understand incredibly sympathetic
to it. I think the fact that it's free is the perfect occasion to people ask that question anyway. Yes, why is this free? How can it be this good and free?
Yeah.
People ask that question and explain it anyway. And that's when this whole thing started with a beginner's guide, not mentioning it. And I put together a whole section on the fact of freedom and what makes it different in that guide. So I feel like the same effect was achieved for a much better marketing point of view.
And let's face it, GNU, for all they're good at in computer science and computing, they are rubbish at names.
They absolutely are.
All the confusion over free. And I accept that there's not an easy-to-use alternative, but free software is massively confusing. GNU, how do you even pronounce it? Is it GNU? Is it new? Is it GNU?
The anger and the infighting, you know, free software isn't open source. You know, the whole thing is just so destructive.
Yeah, and the difference is so minor when it comes down to it.
Moving back to the comments, Al says Linux is more catchy. While I appreciate the sterling work done by the GNU people, I agree that Linux is more catchy. And then goes on to speak to us directly, saying perhaps the bit, this is in our flannel, the bit about GNU Linux being abbreviated in the magazine could be a bit more prominent. Having it three quarters of the way down the right-hand column on page 110 in the magazine and in nearly the smallest font in the magazine does not do it justice. I suggest it's included in the What We Do section on page 3.
Okay.
I think it's in there as well, isn't it?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
Well, if it isn't, we will make it so as of this issue, as of issue 159. Francium Duck says, I agree with Al. Unless courtesy dictates, the GNU can always be silent. Many people agree with Francium Duck. I've written that in caps. Many of the subsequent posters say, yes, that man there, he's right. And kudos for naming himself after Francium, the element which was discovered in France. Hyoj says, Coca-Cola is called Coke. It's not its proper name, but that's what everyone calls it. They adapted, so should the GNU / Linux Nazis.
Yes.
Nazis!
Oh, no, that's the end of the argument.
Yeah. That's the end of the podcast.
No. Can someone just inform me of that rule? Because they sure wrote a rule, isn't there? With the name and everything.
Yes, that's it.
It's Godwin's law, isn't it? Yes, that's the law. So we lose, but... Like you play on if you accidentally pot the black just to get your money's worth, we can pretend that the argument is still going. Dave S. says, frankly, my dear, I just don't give a damn. And Cody, going back to your point about the pronunciation of GNU or new, says, saying new Linux is apt to make people think they need to abandon the old Linux. And because we're pushed for time, let's just give the last word to http://tinyurl.com/lxfoffer1, not verified, who says, Is there any real usable GNU-based OS without the Linux kernel? For example, Herd. And on the other side, is there any real usable Linux kernel-based OS without the GNU toolchain?
There was a post the other day, apparently, that Debian are hoping to include for Herd in their next release as an official support.
Oh, awesome.
There's also a BSD version where you can just use the BSD kernel.
With the GNU tools. Yeah,
and obviously Android is the Linux-based one without the GNU tools.
Without the GNU tools.
Yeah.
Right. So which is bigger then, Android or Herd? Maybe that should be the next open dialogue. And he also says, he or she says, I did you a favour with a great product placement. Thanks for that.
Yeah, that's appreciated.
Yeah. So there we go.
Excellent. That was fantastic, Open Ballot. I'm sorry, it's not a slightly short podcast, but we actually have to finish because we're in a meeting room and the meeting room is about to be occupied by people in suits in about 3 minutes.
Even though the multimedia podcast recording studio is standing empty.
So thank you for listening. Thank you, everyone, for contributing. And we'll hopefully see you in 2 weeks' time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.